Families in New York City are grieving after a fire at a high-rise apartment building yesterday killed 17 people, including 8 children. Dozens of others were injured. This was the deadliest fire in New York City in decades and comes less than a week after a dozen people were killed in a row house fire in Philadelphia. Mayor Eric Adams consoled New Yorkers at a press conference earlier today.
We're going to get through this moment, and we're going to get through it together. And this tragedy is not going to define us. It is going to show our resiliency as we help the families through this.
Claudia Irizarry Aponte is a reporter who covers the Bronx for The City, a nonprofit New York news outlet. When we spoke earlier, I asked her to paint a picture of this apartment building and explain what we know about how the fire started.
So the fire originated in a duplex apartment that spanned the second and third floor. This is a 19-floor apartment building, a brick building, a very large building in this neighborhood, like many other buildings in the Bronx. And fire marshals are still investigating the cause of the fire, but it is believed to have been initiated by a malfunctioning space heater. It's important to note that temperatures were very low in recent days in New York, and temperatures are expected to keep going down today and tomorrow. Families last night were taking shelter at a school just adjacent to the building, and they'll be moving to a different location today to make sure that schools will be able to operate regularly the rest of the week.
One detail that investigators are looking into is a door that was left open in the building that allowed smoke to travel several floors. What can you tell us about that, Claudia?
So there have been longstanding PSAs in mind, as if you recall, probably in schools from fire drills, that you should always close doors in case of a fire. And in New York, there is actually a law that mandates that doors must self-close in case of emergency, in case, you know, when people run out, you know, the last thing on your mind is making sure the door closed. You're just looking out to save your own life. And it is believed that the door where this fire started in that apartment did not close properly. That is certainly something that we expect and we hope to get more answers on as the day and the week progresses.
You've talked to people who lived in the building. What have they been telling you?
One thing that struck me from, I must have spoken to about half a dozen or close to a dozen families last night. Every single person I spoke to described the exact same thing, was that the fire alarm system, the smoke alarm system in the building would go off at all hours of the day and would just ring at all times. And it was just kind of like a very terrible case of kind of like the boy who cried wolf. People just ignored it. They just thought it was just going off as usual, as it would go off on all hours of the day as a false alarm, literally. And unfortunately, a lot of people didn't realize it was too late until smoke started coming into their apartments, or until some people didn't even know there was a fire until they saw the fire department show up and knock on their door, or they saw the ladders go up by their window.
And I've heard some survivors worried in this moment about their immigration status, of all things.
For sure. Many of the residents in this building were immigrants, the majority of them from West African countries and from Latin America, Dominican neighbors, as well as Gambian community members. So Governor Hochul, actually, and Senator Chuck Schumer, who spoke near the site last night alongside Mayor Eric Adams, reinstated over and over again that everyone who needs aid, who needs help, should reach out to the relevant state and city authorities without fear that their information will be shared with ICE or any federal immigration authorities, that everyone who needs help will get it, regardless of immigration status.
Who owns this building and how might they be held responsible for this?
Yeah, the ownership structure of the building is rather complicated. It's kind of like a collection of several private equity and nonprofit affordable housing managers in the city. So clearly, there's a lot of moving parts here. The ownership structure and the funds that this receives through the federal and state government, one would believe, you know, that there are certain threads of accountability there, and one would expect the building to be held at certain standards. And that is certainly one thing that we and a lot of us in the press corps are looking into now, just exactly what went wrong when there are supposed to be so many layers of security in these buildings to make sure that tragedies like this never, ever happen.
Such a tragedy. You mentioned the freezing temperatures there. A lot of people now don't have a place to live. What's next for the displaced? And what about those who lost family members to the fire? What kind of support are they getting?
Well, the city and the Red Cross are putting up families and survivors in hotels. And those who did not go to hotels just went to family or friends' apartments. And we can expect more announcements to come from the city in the coming hours and days.
Claudia Irizarry Aponte is a reporter who covers the Bronx for The City, which is a nonprofit New York news outlet. Claudia, thank you for your work.
Thanks for having me.
Conservatorships have come under more scrutiny in light of Britney Spears' years-long struggle with her father. A judge can establish a conservatorship when someone is found to be unable to make their own decisions. The judge then appoints a guardian who controls the person's financial and personal welfare. Some states are now offering alternatives that are less restrictive. But as Carter Barrett of Side Effects Public Media reports, judges, parents, and people with disabilities may not know about these platforms.
When Nick Klaus was 18, he got into a car accident. The brain injuries caused severe memory loss, headaches, and insomnia. His mom and stepdad went to a judge and requested to be his legal guardian. They said it would be temporary. Now, a decade later, Klaus still feels the effects of the injury, but overall, he's doing well. He's married, he has a daughter, he works as a forklift operator in northern Indiana. But up until a few months ago, every single purchase and decision he made had to be approved by his mom and stepdad. He recently testified at a U.S. Senate hearing on predatory guardianships.
In December 2016, I became a father, but in many ways, my parents still treated me like a child. I had no control over my paychecks. I earned and had to get permission from my stepfather to buy diapers and formula for my daughter.
Klaus says he even had to get his parents' permission to marry. Klaus wanted out of the guardianship, but to do so, he would have needed to hire a lawyer. That would require his parents' permission as well. And he tells me they weren't interested.
They had 100% control over my life, and I just didn't have any say in what I did or anything.
The lawyer representing Klaus's parents did not respond to numerous requests to comment for this story. The data is sparse, but the National Center for State Courts estimates about 1.3 million adults in the U.S. are in legal guardianships. Guardianships are most often used for the elderly or people with disabilities or serious mental illness. In 2019, Indiana joined a handful of other states, including Delaware, Texas, and Wisconsin, to pass a law requiring judges to consider less restrictive alternatives to guardianships. One example is known as supported decision-making. Robert Dinnerstein heads the Disability Rights Clinic at American University in D.C.
Many of us would run important decisions by other people in our lives who are important to us, family, friends, and we don't think anything of that. If you're that person, you get to decide who to talk to. You get to decide whether to listen to the advice, and nobody is sort of stepping in your shoes.
In other words, people in these arrangements have the final say, unlike in a guardianship. Dinnerstein says the problem is often no one's checking to make sure judges are offering these alternatives in the at least 23 states where alternatives are offered. That leaves people with disabilities vulnerable to exploitation. It matters because once a person is in a guardianship, it is really hard to get out. Dinnerstein says the case involving Britney Spears highlights this really well.
It's like Hotel California. Once a guardian is appointed, even if circumstances change where you no longer think you need it, it's really hard to get courts to restore your capacity.
Justin Schrock is an attorney with Indiana Disability Rights, a government agency whose mission is to advocate for the rights of people with disabilities. He represented Nick Klaus to finally terminate his guardianship. He says the new state law is intended to protect people, but on the ground, not much has changed.
You know, I see guardianship petitions that are still filed today that don't even mention whether less restrictive alternatives have been assessed in any way. That has been a minimum requirement since July 1st of 2019.
In January 2021, Klaus and his lawyer filed a petition to end the guardianship. His parents insisted on a psychological evaluation, and the report said the guardianship was unnecessary and dampening his ability to make independent decisions. After 8 months, Klaus's parents agreed to end the guardianship. Shortly after, he took his wife and daughter out for dinner.
And I didn't have to worry about, like, my card getting declined, or I bought my daughter a big piece of chocolate cake
that made me feel good that I could just kind of splurge a little bit.
Advocates for people with disabilities say there are circumstances that warrant a guardianship, but there needs to be oversight and a high bar for placing a person into such a restrictive legal arrangement. And in September, Senators Susan Collins and Bob Casey introduced a bipartisan bill to push for more oversight in guardianship cases, as well as to promote alternatives to guardianship, including supported decision-making. For Here and Now, I'm Carter Barrett.